the studios of Boise State Public Radio News, I'm Samantha Wright, filling in for Gemma Gaudette. This is Idaho Matters. While COVID-19 ravaged the country, the United States has also been seeing a number of outbreaks of diseases that we don't usually see in this country. Dengue fever, monkeypox, measles, malaria, even polio have been reported in the past few years. So why are we seeing these diseases now, and what can we do about them? Plus, a new study says your blood type may have an effect on whether you'll catch COVID-19. How does that work? Here to answer these questions is Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force. If you have a public health question, send us an email, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. Welcome back, Dr. Pate.
Hi, Samantha.
Hi there. So you must have had some free time over the 4th of July holiday because you wrote a whole lot of blog posts about the danger of disease outbreaks in the U.S. that we don't usually see here, including things like dengue fever, like I said, monkeypox, measles, malaria, polio. So first question, why are we seeing these now or in the last few years?
Yeah, so the reason I got on this roll is it occurred to me that so much of the discussion has been monopolized by COVID that I wanted to make sure, especially because so many people now, kind of consider COVID as a thing of the past. Mm. I wanted to make sure that people saw the bigger picture and that COVID is just one sign of the new world in terms of infectious diseases that we are facing. But there's other things. So for example, I just looked since 2020, and of course, that's when we saw the SARS-CoV-2 virus manifest in the United States. Mm-hmm. But just since 2020, and just in the United States, we had dengue fever pop up as a new, we've seen cases before, but usually in travelers. We haven't seen it locally transmitted. And in 2020, it was locally transmitted in Florida. Then, of course, we saw in 22, we saw monkeypox, which had previously only caused outbreaks in Africa, but now we've got it throughout the world. We saw resurgence in polio with a case of poliomyelitis, tragically paralyzing a young man in New York. We saw Candidus auris outbreak and particularly impacting Nevada hospitals in 22, which is a fungus that is dreadful. We saw a recurrence of measles as an outbreak in Ohio, a big outbreak there when we had eliminated measles from the U.S. back in 2000. And then, of course, this year, we talked a few shows ago about an outbreak of malaria in Florida and Texas, and we had eliminated malaria from this country in 1951. So to answer your question, what's going on? It's different things with different ones of these diseases. But if you look at dengue fever. And then I also wrote that there were other outbreaks even before 2020, like chikungunya and Zika. And those are all what we call vector-borne diseases. In other words, it's not transmitted human to human, like colds are and so forth, or like COVID can be, or from animals to humans. It's insects to humans. And in these cases, it's the bite of a particular type of mosquito that gets the virus and transmit it. And typically, we only see chikungunya, Zika, and dengue down in the tropical and subtropical environments. So it does raise the question as to how much climate change is playing a role here with warming, and are those mosquitoes that normally aren't up here in the northern hemisphere, are they now more comfortable and able to propagate up here? So it's a warning that there might be an ongoing threat. With measles and polio, those are vaccine preventable diseases that we eliminated polio back in 1979 from the United States, not from the world, regrettably. but from the United States. And measles, we eliminated that from the United States back in 2000. However, we have growing misinformation, disinformation, lack of confidence in vaccines, and coordinated anti-vax campaigns that are causing people not to get these vaccines. And then we see tragic results, like I mentioned, this young man who is now paralyzed for the rest of his life.
Well, let's talk about the polio. Just because, as you said, I mean, this was eliminated decades ago in the U.S., because of the polio vaccine, great success. We've seen a case. Do we know where it came from? Did it, how did it get here?
Yes, we have been able to determine that it was from another country, because we had really at one time, we had eliminated polio from the entire world except for two countries, Pakistan and Afghanistan. And so, you know, which is just terribly frustrating to me. It's like the football team getting the kickoff received and then running to the 1 yard line, but cannot in the next three plays get it across the goal line. We were so close, but because this wild type virus continued to circulate in those two countries, there have been outbreaks, and regrettably, now we are at the point where the CDC has just issued a travel advisory to 30 countries where you now have to be concerned of the potential of getting polio if you're not previously vaccinated against polio. And part of the reason why it is now a threat in 30 countries is that in poor and developing countries, they use the oral polio vaccine to control outbreaks. So in the United States, the only polio vaccine you can get and that your family hopefully has received, and if you haven't, please check with your doctor. You should be getting what's called IPV, which is an injectable polio vaccine. With that vaccine, you get a shot and it's inactivated virus, so you don't get infected and you can't get poliomyelitis, so-called paralytic polio. The problem with the oral vaccine is that although the virus strains are weakened, they still are live and they replicate in your gut and when you take it orally. And so this is like the sugar cubes that a lot of people remember that we used to use. But it is possible for the virus, once in the gut, even though it's been in a weakened form that doesn't cause paralysis to the person getting the oral polio vaccine, they can shed the virus in their stool for potentially, certainly days and potentially for weeks, and the virus reverts in the gut to that paralytic form. So now if somebody has been vaccinated with the oral polio vaccine and you're in close contact with that person, but you haven't been vaccinated, now you can get paralytic polio. And that's what happened to this young man. It was somebody who traveled from another country where they're still using oral polio vaccine. And that person shed the virus in their stool and this person contracted it, and not having been vaccinated, now he's paralyzed. And the reason that some of these poor and developing countries are using the oral form is it's less expensive and it doesn't require anybody skilled, because you're not giving the injection. You just hand out the sugar cubes when there's an outbreak. So now the cases of polio that we generally see are from transmission from people that have gotten the oral polio vaccine.
So first, Dr. Pate's blog did a whole thing. You did a whole thing on polio and some of these other diseases. Fascinating stuff. Check it out. And if you didn't know that Dr. Pate and Dr. Ted Epperly wrote a book, Preparing for the Next Global Outbreak, I highly recommend it. And you talk about some of the things that you've already mentioned about why these diseases are coming back. You mentioned misinformation, climate change. But you have some other things in the book that you talk about: global trade and travel, not enough research, not enough vaccines, and not protecting against animal to human transmission. What can we do, you know, as ordinary person in Idaho, what can we do to try and help stop these diseases?
Yeah. And so you're very right, Samantha. And I think that for most of us, all we can do is put pressure on our representatives in Congress to do more, to push for more. We have previously had the attitude that, well, if there's a disease like monkeypox and it's just causing, or Ebola, or Marburg virus, we've talked about a number of these. If it's just causing outbreaks in Africa, what do we need to do about it? Why do we need to spend money to try to research it or come up with vaccines? And I think the answer is that we are now understanding that we are globally interconnected in a way that we never have before. And so people are taking tourist trips to Africa. People are conducting business with these African countries. And millions of people travel every single day. And the problem is you can pick up these viruses and bring them to wherever you're traveling to. And so we have to get more serious about these diseases. I think monkeypox is a great example where we didn't think that would ever be a global problem, although some of us cautioned about it. And now it is. And we run the risk that it could now become endemic here in the United States, which is a thought that is really shocking. So we need to do more research into these viruses. We need to help combat these disease outbreaks wherever they occur, realizing now that we are at risk. And we need to, when there are new outbreaks, we need to respond in a completely different way. COVID showed us that we're way too late in our response to prevent people bringing it into our country.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. So I can't believe it. I've only got a couple minutes left. Let's do the COVID-19 question of the day. Does my blood type make me more likely to catch COVID? You had some great information on this new study. How is that possible? How does that work?
Yeah, we had actually started seeing some evidence of this relatively early in the pandemic, that there seemed to be some association with the blood type. I thought it was just going to be that it wouldn't be the blood type. It was probably some other protein close on the chromosome that codes for our blood type. But it turns out that what it is, and we've talked many, many, many times, that the virus attaches to the ACE2 receptor. Well, what we found out is through this study is it also can be can attach to the protein or the sugar and protein that are on type A blood type people's red blood cells and their other cells, and that can be another way that the virus can get into the cell. So it's not that if you're not type A that you're not going to catch COVID or get infected or even get severe disease, but those that are type A, it may be a lot easier for COVID for that virus to get into your blood cells, which it can travel through your blood, or get into your other cells because of this type A sugar that you have on the surface of your cells. What we need to do now is look to see, does that really make any difference in outcomes? Are people that are type A, are they more likely to get severe illness or die? Are they more likely to get long COVID? And I just haven't seen those studies, so I don't know the practical implication, but certainly there's reason to be concerned that type A people may be more prone to become infected than non-type A blood people.
Interesting. It's fascinating, some of the information that's coming out and that you keep tracking, and we will keep tracking with you. We've been speaking with Dr. David Pate, former CEO of St. Luke's Health System and a current member of the Idaho Coronavirus Task Force. If you have a COVID-19 or public health question, send us an email, idahomatters@boisestate.edu. We'll ask Dr. Pate next week. Dr. Pate, as always, thank you so much for your time and expertise.
My pleasure, Samantha. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Samantha Wright. We'll see you tomorrow.
From an Iraq war cover-up to towns ravaged by opioids to the roots of our modern immigration crisis, Embedded explores what's been sealed off and undisclosed. NPR's original investigative podcast reveals why these stories and the people behind them matter. Listen to the Embedded podcast, only from NPR.